Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men TV podcast. I'm Paul Machin, Chris Pajak and Ross Chanley join me in the studio for this one. Incidentally, and almost accidentally, we may as well just call it, the show is unofficially sponsored by Threads for Reds because we've all managed to come in wearing the same thing.
They've got more designs as well, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they've got fantastic designs, but clearly we've all got a soft spot for this one in particular. But go and check out threadsforreds.com. There's some brilliant stuff on
available
there
right now. In hoodies, t-shirt and sweatshirt.
apparently so, yeah, there you go. Right, yeah, it is the biggest game of the season, looming Tottenham Hotspur, and obviously we're going to talk a little bit about Gerard Houllier as well. I guess we'll have to just have a last little mention on the Fulham game before we get into all of that. But we do have a kickoff question. It comes from at Peter Frank 5. Would you rather us have no more injuries through the rest of Klopp's current contract or have Klopp sign until 2028? Chris Pajak.
No more injuries through the rest of Klopp's current contract.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Because we just win everything for the next couple of years and then we're going to be in good position, good players, do some better research on players that don't get injured. Someone else will come in and we'll just carry on.
This feels like one of those things that's dead easy to say now, but in 3 years' time, when he's going and there's no more Jurgen Klopp and you're going, I had the chance to make this.
See, I'm already thinking if he gets no more injuries until the end of his contract, he goes, God, this was easy. I can do another 4 years of this.
Yeah. Yeah, then he'd be okay. Let's add the proviso that he has to go at the end of that. Then
no, let's not.
Well, it's done.
It's not.
So, given the choice, no injuries for the rest of his contract, but he goes at the end of his contract, or you get to get him. We have injuries that we have no control over, but he stays until 2028.
I only take first questions.
Still no injuries for me.
Okay,
I think we just piss everything for the next couple of years. I'm fine with that.
I think we piss it anyway. Oh, you have little faith. I think long term.
We just drew to Fulham, Paul, so we're not doing that, are we?
Oh, wow. Okay. You spent too much time on social media, Mr. Chanley. Okay, interesting. Let us know your thoughts on that in the comments. We are doing this podcast live, so if you're here on YouTube alongside us, then please feel free to get to your comments and thoughts and all that kind of stuff. And we've got Noel Mackey, Mr. Bruh, European Royalty, Ethsham Ul-Hassan, the Great Metropolis, amongst others, all hanging out with us while we do this. So, yeah, join in. We were going to find it. We're going to talk about a little bit again about Fulham. We're going to go through some of our favourite Houllier memories. Well, we've done the tribute to Houllier. Chris and I had a good chat about him that's on the channel already. But, I wanted to dive into a couple of more individual things. And there's some belters that it's kind of brought up in my memory in the last day or so. So, yeah, and then we're going to look at how Liverpool go about Operation Top at Christmas. But before we do, we've got a book that's available right now. It's selling like hotcakes. It's one last look at it before we give up doing mad pushes on it before the Christmas period. But yeah, here's another look. The second Red Men TV book, Champions of Everything, is available for sale right now. It comes in two editions, the standard edition and the special edition, which comes signed with a custom message of your choice and with a limited edition Red Men TV sticker pack as well. The book is huge. It is A4 size and it is chock full of insight. Photographs from around the world following the mighty Reds, who were reigning European champions, who won the Super Cup, who became champions of the world, and then capped it all off with a 19th league title, becoming champions of England. The book looks at the highs, lows, absolute insanity and bitterness of rival fans, and some of the craziness from our own fan base as well along the way. It is available now on the Red Men TV store. Get involved. Uh, Hey everyone, welcome back. Yes, Champions of Everything is available right now. It's available digitally as well. If you search for it on Amazon, you'll track it down. The special edition is now sold out, unfortunately, so if you want a signed copy, you've missed out on the chance. There might be a chance that we get some more in the new year, but I wouldn't hold out much hope of that because it means Ross doing loads of extra work, unfortunately. But the normal edition is still available. So yeah, if you want to get one of them, grab them quick because they will be the next thing to go. Chris, the Fulham game is we're going to reach a point, obviously, as we head towards Tottenham, where we don't have to talk or think about that game anymore, which is going to be lovely. It's an interesting moment, and we can't know how we're going to react to this yet. The big hope is that it's a massive kick up the arse without us having lost the game and completely and utterly lost momentum.
Yeah, first of all, I thought I'd put the Fulham game behind me because we'd already done the build-up and I don't normally look back once we've done the build-up, so I'm a little bit gutted that I have to talk about this again because I was over it and I am over it, to be honest with you. I can now rationally look at it and go, yeah, we made mistakes, we didn't play great, we didn't lose a game of football, we didn't lose any ground in the title race. In fact, we're in a position this week where we could go 3 points clear if we win our game, yeah. Which is a good position to be in as a football fan, isn't it? So, but you are right, Paul. I think, you know, we didn't lose first and foremost. We didn't lose ground in the title race secondly, as I've already mentioned and stuff. And at least the lads have got something to play for. Other than just it being Tottenham, they've got a little bit of pride to play for because it was such a bad performance first half that they need to show us what they can do almost. They'll feel the need anyway.
Well, it's the point, isn't it? And that you look at these next two games that are coming up, and obviously Tottenham and Palace. Ross, we know what the objective is. The objective is to win as many football games as possible and see where it stands. But really, the objective is to win the title. And the Fulham game, the only way Liverpool get to control the narrative because no ground was lost in the title race, we get to decide whether that was a poor result or, you know, or we've got away with one or it's a good point, you know what I mean, given how crap the performance was for large swaths of that game. If we go on and get the results in the upcoming games, then we can safely go, okay, well, it was a learning curve, it was a kick up the arse, it was one where actually, you know, we were a bit tired and we were struggling a bit and actually we got a hard fought point when really we could have gotten absolutely tonked everywhere. And that's a very good thing that it's in Liverpool's hands. We've not slipped into the chasing pack. We're still at the forefront.
Yeah, well, that's one of the few positives about having a congested fixture list. You can quickly move on. I think we said the same thing about Atlanta and which is Sheffield United that we played. It was poor performances, slow starts in those games as well. I think that's a concerning common theme in these games. The Liverpool starting games pretty slow. I haven't seen enough credit given to Fulham. You might have covered that, but I thought, you know, they're fine.
No, Chris thinks the shit.
But I think
no, I gave them loads of credit. I do think the shit. Like,
well, I think the shit, but also the fan and the feet. So I think they deserve a bit of credit for, you know, Liverpool were poor, but believe it, Fulham are good. Them having fans back in stadiums, I think, is a huge positive for them. It was the same for Everton at the weekend, you know, seeing their team in the Premier League. But on Liverpool stuff again, yeah, we got a time to put things right pretty quickly, and what big game to do it. There should be no extra motivation for this. I don't know whether it was complacency creeped in against Fulham. They shouldn't do this, and I don't think they do, but maybe it's a tiny bit of, oh, Fulham are a bit shit, you know, we don't need to give 100% in this. And then,
well, there's a degree to which, with a couple of injuries around and the heavy congestive, look, none of the other European sides won at the weekend, which I think tells a story in of itself. There was a degree to which it was like, get through the Champions League, and then and I think the outside were like, okay, and now you can focus on the league, and everyone else is like, fucking hell, lads, it's like, you know, I've just finished a marathon, it's like, are we going out for a pint? It's like, can I just get a second to catch me breath?
I think the big issue that people had was the results that obviously went forward. It was a good opportunity to create a gap, but also the Midland game where people are still questioning why Salah played, why Jota played. Trent's come back from an injury. I think he was knackered in the Fulham game as well. Why did he go and do that when he didn't need to? But hindsight's a wonderful thing, which won't stop me from being angry about it still. Mm. But, you know, it'd be to question you.
Anger's probably just a bit fucking misplaced on it all, really, isn't it? I mean, again, contextually, it's only a bad thing if you then don't improve from it, if you don't get better from it. And the one thing we've seen consistently is that we do, but again, of course, the current situation is one that we're struggling to fully wrap our heads around. The thing that I take encouragement from, and it maybe it's a bit of schadenfreude to some extent, Chris, is that everyone's struggling, and that was again evidenced by the fact that so many of the top teams struggled. Like that Man City should have absolutely, well, either should have wiped the floor with United, or United should have done something to wipe the floor with Man City. The game was ripe for the taking, and it was like the, I mean, I was re-watching the first Avengers film. It's like Hawkeye reaching for another arrow and finding his quiver's empty. It's like,
everyone at the moment, I think, is just so nervous of falling too far behind, because everybody's just in this holding pattern at the moment where they just want to be close come the turn of the year, within striking distance. And that's why the Man City, Man United game played out the way it is, as well as, you know, injuries and you know, amount of games played and everything else, because everyone just wants to be close. And they're all thinking, when it calms down a little bit, we'll be able to strike. And that goes for Liverpool as well at the moment. I think, you know, we are in a bit of a holding pattern where we just want to stay within striking distance. We're waiting for lads to come back from injury, and then we'll hopefully kick on from there. It's what everyone's been saying for weeks now, isn't it? When these lads come back, we're going to kick on and all that type of stuff. That's what we're waiting for as well. And so over the last couple of years, Liverpool and Manchester City have gone out to win the league. That doesn't feel like what we're doing at the moment. It feels like we're playing in a slightly different manner because of the extenuating circumstances of how fucked 2020 has been, plus all those injuries and everything else.
It was just another example. We've had this for the last three seasons where we've come out of a weekend very much with the Liverpool blinkers on and gone, oh my God, that's crap. Is that part of a larger malaise? Is there a deeper rooted problem at Liverpool? Now, obviously, injuries in this instance. And we've gone, God, that's shit, isn't it? And then a lot of us then turn and look at the rest of the weekend's fixture and go, oh, okay, yeah, actually that wasn't too bad. But I think there are some of us who walk away from it and don't ever lift those blinkers off and roll into the week with this building narrative of Liverpool are maybe having a bit of a struggle or whatever, which is then vindication if then Liverpool don't get across the line against Spurs, which it isn't for me, because Spurs is a twat of a game no matter which way you slice it.
Yeah, I think straight after the game, certainly, I think it's still a bit raw, isn't it? So, you know, you're quite rightly pissed off. But I think, like Chris says, on reflection, when you look back at it, you have to look at things on face value and what the other struggle that teams are going through. I think there's also a comparison to last season, and I find myself doing this sometimes. This time last year, the league was more or less fucking done.
We were top of Christmas this time. Yeah. Like, I think it was like the first game in December we pretty much guaranteed.
We had the Carabao Cup, we'll get around about next week, and then obviously Qatar after that, and everything was great, and I think people want that again. Mm-hmm. But of course, like Chris says, if 2020, everything being so fucked, you can't have that, but it gives you that bit of security of, you know, in fact, if you don't have a good game, there's a buffer there. There's no buffer now, so you have to, every game is important.
Absolutely. And look, I want to dive in a bit more into Spurs and how Liverpool go about this week and maybe beyond. I know we did a bit of this last week as well, but I think it's still pertinent. But I wanted to talk about Gerard Houllier. I know we've done the special, I did a video over on my YouTube channel as well. But again, there's just some things that I missed out. I've listened to a few other people's bits and pieces of the car, seen loads of the amazing comments, and I wanted to talk about our sort of specific, not like necessarily specific to Houllier memories, so much as memories of Houllier's Liverpool side. Because obviously, again, me and Chris are the same age next year, and Ross is a little bit younger
less
than us,
of
course.
Month, yeah.
but yeah, I wanted to kick it off because it's a game that really sticks with me in a random way. Because everyone goes on about like the treble season, which is sound, I'm right too, and there's I've got memories of the finals in that season and loads of other random little bits, but it's some of the more random ones for me. So like Boa Vista at Anfield is a big one for me. It was our first ever night in the Champions League, and I went back and I watched Michael Owen scores an absolute worldie of a goal in that game, but it was so, like, I remember, like, it was the first time we wore that amazing European home shirt that we'd released for the first time. Like I went and bought that. That was like I was due to go to university. I think I moved to university like the week after this game, and I went and bought my first student loan. I went and bought that European home shirt because it was just a thing of beauty. Liverpool are in the Champions League. We got a special shirt. It had four stars on it to represent the four European cups that we'd won.
Those four stars for ages.
Yeah. That was it gets underestimated because we now, because of Istanbul, and I think it's mad, there's like a fog with which we view the late 90s and a lot of the Houllier era, Chris, where that 2005 is so big and thick in between now and then that we do kind of forget, like, the four-star thing. It's mad. That was, we were so proud of having our four European Cups, but five was our identity, that it's hard to look back to that. But that was, again, Liverpool playing in the Champions League at the time was like, in our lives, that was a massive,
well, that's
massive
it, isn't it? I mean, for a start, you know, it's hard to get into. It's harder to get into, isn't it? You know, first of all, it was the top team, and then it was the second team. You know, you could get there through coming second, and then third, and then fourth eventually and stuff as well. So it was just a harder competition to get into the Champions League back then. And, you know, we finally, and we were so far behind Manchester United and Arsenal in the 90s, really. You know, we get close occasionally, and we were good enough to beat them in one-off games, but we could never sustain it for a full season. So when we started to get close under Julia, it had that, like, well, everyone remembers that Benitez comes in, he finishes here, and then he plays high, and then he plays high. Julia did that, mm-hmm. to the point where he got to second, and then we digressed a little bit and stuff. But that was, it's like looking at the Empire State Building. Everyone knows what the top of the Empire State Building looks like, but not many people know what the bottom looks like.
Yeah.
And that's what Istanbul is to what Julia's era is. He's the foundations that enable it to go so high.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and that's why it's a big, shining fifth European Cup, but we get experience in European competition under Julia. We get into the Champions League under Julia. We start challenging for an actual title under Gerard Houllier and stuff. So he's a massive part of Liverpool Football Club, the modern Liverpool Football Club, certainly.
Yeah,
I think one of the best compliments you can give him is the fact that, you know, we couldn't compete with United and Arsenal, like, on the pitch, but financially as well. Like, the amount of players that he had to buy, mm-hmm. recruitment back then wasn't what it is now. Okay, there was a couple of hit and miss ones of, you know, people that we didn't like.
We all
like,
know,
or,
we're talking Doof.
Well, yeah, it's, well, Shea Rue was the other one, the next Zidane or whatever it was.
Yeah,
the fact that, you know, them, there's so many good buyers in there of the work of recruitment, of like Sam Hippier or Stefan Ancho, for, you know, defender slash goalkeeper, of, you know, progressing Liverpool into competing. That's a hard.
He really was the first modern goalkeeper on show, wasn't he?
But that's so hard.
Stuck on his line a bit too much, really, though.
But it's a difficult task to do, especially when United off the pitch, you know, commercially, we're just romping it, and Arsenal's, you know,
it genuinely felt like we could, like we were on the path to being back on Man United. Was so good, and Arsenal was the best Arsenal we ever were in that era as well. And we end up kind of benefiting from, you mentioned that, the expanded Champions League, the expanded places in the Champions League, but also we end up in like I was equated to, like, we were a bit of a B story to the A story of Arsenal and United around that time. But we were on a stage where we could turn up against them and have an amazing game of football, you know, and create be back at playing one of Sky's biggest games at the time, where we were rightly at that table, we could hold our own. But we were very much, our rivals around that time were very much Leeds and then Chelsea a year or two later, just before and just after the Abramovich money.
It felt like we could have an impact on the direction of the title.
Yeah,
but the title would never come to us.
Yeah.
Like, if we did well against Arsenal in the two fixtures, we'd hand the league to Manchester United. You know what I mean? Like, we could give them a bloody nose, but over the course of a season, we just weren't there.
Yeah, I think that's one of the games, very few games that under Hulley I went to. We played Arsenal just before Christmas. I think we beat them 4-0. Like, absolutely just wiped the floor with them. That was the time when they were at their pomp in around 2002. They will be no challenge for the title. In fact, I think that's when we finished second then, wasn't it? That season, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and again, when you compare the two teams, I think Barnby scored, Owen scored, maybe Steven Gerrard as well. And, you know, they got, like, Vieira and, you know, just Arsenal at their pomp. And you're thinking, trying to compete with that and to beat them 4-0 was amazing.
Was that the game where they give it up, where they had, like, Manninger in goal and stuff like that, and they totally give it up around that point. But anyway, your point
the pitch being a fucking mess.
Yeah.
It always was back then, yeah. And yet we were still one of the best pitches in the league.
Yeah. Absolutely. Chris, have you got a memory?
Got loads of them, to be honest. I think the biggest one for me was, I wasn't at the game, but watching the reaction of when Julio comes back from his operation. Mm-hmm. Roma in it, mm-hmm. in the Champions League. I think we secure. Do we get a place in the quarterfinal off the back of that?
I think it might have given us the
quarterfinal. So I think we beat them 2-0 and stuff. But it's just sort of seeing him walk out to the pitch and seeing the fans, and spoken to people who were there and stuff, and, like, you know, one of the loudest things that you can have at Anfield. And then the other one, which is, it's mad because it should be the one that everyone talks about, and yet no one talks about it because it's too obvious. But, like, the UEFA Cup final. Mm. I mean, that was the first proper European Cup we won, as when I was old enough to remember them. You know what I mean? And
do you remember that night? Because it was mad. Because we were in a mate of yours' house, and because we're all badly superstitious weirdos, we all needed to we'd say something about the game, and then have to touch wood. And then because that game was so mad, because it kept going, they'd go, we score, but we think it's done, and then it'd all come back the other way. We ended up sat in front of the telly around this little nest of table, wooden table, because it was the most wooden thing, because all of a sudden touching the windowsill that had about 15 years of paint jobs on the top of it was obviously too thick for us to be actually touching wood. So with a load of us crowded around this telly in his mum and dad's living room touching this wooden table, because that was the jinx, anti-jinx thing that was going to get us through.
It was a mad game of Togger, that one. Obviously at first European Cup finals decided by goal and goal, I think it was, wasn't it? I can't even I watched the highlights back yesterday and today, and I kind of forgot that they had two red cards in the game. It's just mental, because I remember, obviously I remember the winner, with it being the own goal from the Gary Mack free kick and stuff, but it was just a mental game of football. Mental game of football.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's the best trophy as well, by a country mile.
It was that era. What's boss about it was, you knew, that was when you started to know people who'd been to that game. So our mate Lucy, I think her brother went, and he because Alaves produced that shirt that had the names of all their fans in the shirt. It was a proper unique thing, and it was a badge
Sammy
of honour.
Sammy did it a few years later, actually.
What?
Sammy did it with the season ticket.
But it was a badge of honour to get one of those shirts, and her big brother came back with, and he'd swapped his Liverpool shirt for one of these Alaves shirts, and it was wow. I went to Cardiff twice that season, but to go to Dortmund and be there, and I say, all of a sudden you had that was our era of. You're old enough to actually go to these games off your own back and stuff. No, amazing. Ross?
Just a couple of big ones that people have already mentioned. I think, the FA Cup final against Arsenal, again, I didn't go, I think it was 12 at the time, but coming through, I think I started getting into football when I was about 8 or 9, went to a game in 96, but when you first started watching it, you get into it against another players. Michael Owen was coming through it at that time as well. But just watching that game, I remember we moved the telly outside into the garden because it was a fucking dead hot day. And you remember moments like that, and watching it with your family and stuff like that. It's I think I'd even like the iconic bits of the commentary and the kits and all that stuff. You look back and it's just proper football nostalgia, I think, isn't it?
It's mad how I was thinking about this on the drive in this morning, and how there's an age at which you start to learn. So I look at my kids now, and they love the idea of Liverpool. So they love the kits and the songs, and they like the player names, but they don't really know football. But they're aware of the concepts around it, and then it becomes all about the players. So you start to know football, you start to play football, and you become obsessed with players. But there comes a point where, so the manager's there, and you know the manager, but you don't think about his tactics. You don't think about what the manager brings. He's just the fella who leads them out, and you don't watch press conferences. You just ask who scores loads of goals and get the stickers and the cards and all that. But then all of a sudden you become aware of the manager, and you start to think about football. And Ullier was that for our generation, was the first time. You thought about who was going to play where and how your team was going to play and how your team, and that for me, that was the first sense of it. Rafa was where I truly got lost in the whole thing and became totally and utterly fell in love with a football manager. But Ullier was that step, and it's mad out again. Those games in the formative years. There's two in two seasons. There's another one of us being out, Chris, and it was when we beat Roma 2-0 away when Owen scores two, and we were in the 147 in town, and ended up stood up in front of the big screen, and then someone would stand in front of us, so we'd stand in front of them and stand in front of them, and we ended up in this unspoken passive aggressive war for being able to have eyes on the screen, smashing 50p vodka Red Bulls and going to the crazy and then going to the crazy house afterwards to celebrate. Just
good times.
Yeah, just
good times, man. They were the best times, actually. That 2001 season was amazing for some of those games and stuff. In fact, was that 2001 or that 2002?
That was
0102. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable times. And we watched a few games in the 1-4 that year, didn't we?
Yeah.
I always remember going to the 1-4. I don't remember much after the 1-4 from that night, if I'm honest.
The last one I wanted to chuck in was, I think you went with me, to this game, I think a bunch of us went, was Lazio in a pre-season friendly. And it's mad. I actually found there's a couple of really interesting curio bits on this. It is the first game that LFC TV, which didn't exist at the time, it was LiverpoolFC.tv, streamed live on their website.
It was not only that, it was the first thing that any football club had streamed on their website.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube. Steve Hunter introduces it, which is mad. Like, he's just there, and it's the most exciting
sound.
He's just
a boy as well.
Bust a wee boy. It is the most exciting set of highlights I've ever watched, because Steve Hunter is full Steve Hunter in it, and he's going for his it's a Champions League semi-final. And I always remember, like, when I went back and watched the highlights before, and I remember it for one reason only, and it's that Neil Mellor came on and snapped Alessandro Nesta. Now, in the commentary, he says Negro, and I'm sure it was, in my memory, it was Nesta anyway. And he come on, won like a 50-50, and then took him out, and the whole cop started singing Neil Mellor's name. And it was like the stupid throwing was, we get beat 1-0 in the game, but it's like, one last interesting thing, I found the Liverpool Echo article on it, the match review. Get on this. It was Marcus Babbel's first game back at Liverpool after his illness for the start, but get on this for a few paragraphs. With early talk of a glistening career for Jimmy Traore at Anfield, now turning to him playing the makeweight in a renewed bid for Damien Duff, the young French defender's mind could easily have been anywhere but on curbing the talents of Hernan Crespo and Claudio Lopez. Perhaps driven by a determination to prove Houllier would be wrong to let him go, Traore creditably gave a solid display with at least 3 last-ditch interceptions, helping to keep Lazio out until just before the break. In the second half, the new leaner and meaner Milan Baros looked alive.
Leaner and meaner because he got a skinhead summer.
Well, Gregory Vignol slotted comfortably back into defence after his long absence. Loved him. But it was Diouf and Cheyrou that the Anfield eyes were trained on, and neither disappointed. Little was seen of the 9.5 million Senegalese striker in front of goal, or as an aerial threat, but his touch, control and awareness around the penalty area bore all the hallmarks of a class act. But it was French midfielder Cheyrou, one of the less heralded summer signings, who made the greatest impact with the cop, chanting his name within half an hour of his home debut. Not a bad start by anyone's standards. With vision, a polished left foot and an eye for goal, the young midfielder looks a shrewd purchase at just 3.7 million, even if he does face a tough fight for a regular first team place. Let me just check that, actually. That would be my suspicion. It's, you know what, it's so old that it doesn't actually have who's written the, let's see if it's got the byline at the bottom. It doesn't say who it's by, because it's mad. The credit to Liverpool Echo's website, all its old stuff formats into the current shape of the website.
Yeah.
No, it's all, but it's all.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same. It just the text put and the photos port over to the new website, which you go on the BBC website, and it's a mad old school format. But no, I don't know. I guess that Chris Bascom's probably not a bad shout for that one, or maybe it might have been.
Lazio side that was as well.
Yes, the Lazio Barrett, Marco Gianni in goal, Giuseppe Pancaro, Yap Stam, Fernando Couto came off for Nesta, for Giuseppe Favalli, Oddo, Fiori, Stankovic, yeah. Liverani, Cesar came off for Baggio, which I think would have been the other Baggio. Hernan Crespo was replaced by, I think that would have been Simone Inzaghi, maybe.
And he was last. Hang on a minute, the other one.
Pippo Inzaghi.
Yeah, I think he played for Lazio before going to Juve.
There you go.
They both might have done, thinking about it.
What a team, indeed. Anyone want to throw any more in before we move on?
I've got one more, which is, speaking of Bruno Cheyrou, we were telling you in the kitchen before, we got...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you buy fucking tickets on general sale, madly enough, and Liverpool were playing Barl in the Champions League, which again I think was 2002, and it was my dad, my uncle, my brother all got in the car, and he told us we were going to Costco to go to the shops, and I was like, oh, you want to watch the traffic because the football's on tonight? And then we fucking bundled in the car, went to the game, drew 1-1. I think Barrow scored in that game when he had his skinhead. Got home, he's like, how did you tell your mates you went to the footy? He's like, yeah. He's like, oh, next week, that was because you've been coupled next week just for a laugh. Went to Spartak Moscow 5-0. Sherry scored a goal, and so did Salah Jiao.
Amazing. So, what have been many games where the two of them scored?
Nope. Don't think
they was that ever. Lazio game the first game we went to together then?
I think so.
Yeah.
It was me, you, and definitely Steve. I think Steve and maybe his dad went as well. Yeah. Like, but I remember it for being able to smoke on the cop, which is a mad thing. Sat in your seat having a biff to watching the Reds. What a time. Right, Sal, let's move on into Operation Top at Christmas and beyond. We've got Spurs twice in 6 weeks. They sandwich a festive period that's either going to be the making or breaking, I think, of either of these sides. The one thing I think that's interesting, I had a look, and this is worth doing if you fancy a laugh, because did we do the build-up show with Errol, right? And he said, like, maybe they'll change the tactics and come out. I don't know if you've looked on SofaScore. I went back and looked at their the momentum graphs for all their big wins recently, and it's just like
no momentum.
It's like where they score, nothing, where they score, nothing, and then the bank, whatever other side of the chart is like flat or as big as it can possibly be. Well, and that, you know, we'll talk about the fixtures in a moment, Chris, but I can't see anywhere where it's anything other than that Spurs are going to just say, yeah, have the ball, because Mourinho fucking hates the ball. He hates his sides having the ball. He thinks having the ball is for losers because he believes that all football players inherently are shit, I think. And he thinks the more they've got it, the more chance they've got to fuck it up. And that's what it's going to be, really. I think you're going to say to Liverpool, here you go, you're in your house, here's the ball, we dare you to come and beat us.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how Liverpool approach it, really, because I think we know that Tottenham are going to approach it in exactly that manner. There's no reason for them not to. It's working for them, mm-hmm. for a start, and we know that that's what Mourinho's done his entire managerial career. So I just wonder whether Liverpool are going to try and work the ball into the box like we normally do, or we're going to try a few pot shots, something a little bit different, where we just have a few digs from the edge of the area, because it's noticeable that we're not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I understand the reason why. I've been talking about it for 2 years on the Stats and Tactics show about, you know, shot quality and all that type of stuff. So I get it. But in these types of games, sometimes it is the big 30-yarder, 25-yarder that breaks a game open and maybe could just cause them to change their game plan slightly.
Mm. I think it's also dangerous for Spurs. The worst thing you can do when you're playing against Liverpool is come out and play. You know, leave massive gaps, leave space open, you know. Bobby Firmino dropping deep and you'll find those gaps. I don't think Spurs will do that. I think they'll fancy their chances of playing deep. You know, like Chris said, it's working for them, but they've also got the defensive stability now. You know, Højbjerg, I think, has been massive for them. I can't remember the last time they had a player like that in defensive midfield that would just do all the dirty work, which, you know, we've seen from Mourinho, he likes. Yeah. You know, they've got fit players that are full of confidence. Harry Kane and Son have been phenomenal so far this season, so Liverpool will be wary, and they'll know the likes of Trent's coming back from injury. We're possibly going to have two midfielders at fucking centre half. God knows if Matip's going to play this one. So why would you not go and exploit that with pace and power that they've got?
No, and that's it. And again, it's Mourinho all over. And the thing that he's got going for him, and it, that we're always going to have to be wary of, is just making sure that the back door is shut at the other end. But I think your point's really interesting there, Chris, about the pot shot thing. And I wonder, because when you were talking, a second you started saying it, my brain immediately went Phil Coutinho, and they went, no, shut up, you idiot, because he doesn't play for us anymore. And I went, well, who?
Curtis Jones.
Curtis Jones, but Oxlade-Chamberlain was the first, was the next name that came to me in that. And I'm not sure that it's necessarily a game made for him just in terms of fitness and all that kind of stuff. But it might be, you know, the it's all about a time to announce yourself. I mean, whether you go with him from the start or whether he's a 20 minutes to go when legs are getting a bit tired and you just want to put a bit more fresh impetus into what you're doing, that could be, you know, could be an interesting option for us.
It could be, yeah. It could be something we try and exploit. You know, I think if you go into a game thinking that that's what you're going to do, because you know that they're good defensively, they're not going to let you play through them. It has to be absolutely perfect to do that. Then you can sort of create your own space on the edge of the area, you know, with Salah and Mane and stuff like that. Again, it's not something I've ever seen Liverpool do, and it's not something we should expect to see. But I definitely feel like Klopp could just say, look, if you get a sight of goal, have a shot.
Yeah.
Whereas crowd. I think normally he'd go, make sure you work it into a good place.
The one thing that's evident, actually, in Mourinho games, and I think back to 13-14, I've never seen a more obvious tell than this. We played Manchester City, and Anfield was an absolute fucking cauldron. It was like, we just suffocated the life out of the team. We've done that literally every game almost since.
You can't boo your own players.
Exactly. And Mourinho turns up with Chelsea, and we're going, right, oh yeah, we did this. We were going booing and jeering every touch, and they never had the ball. So you can't, the difference then, back then, is because we had no songs. So, you know, Pop and Brendan, Rodgers, Liverpool, which is, in hindsight, awful. This is one of those games, isn't it, where the pot shots thing is a very good way to jumpstart an atmosphere, because it just gets people up, it gets them excited, and even though shock quality, you're not, the odds of you scoring from the edge of the box are so tiny, that's why it's such a special thing to do, and it's something we actively avoid because it just undoes what you're trying to do in terms of building momentum or building play. But I can't disagree with that. I think it's a pretty sensible
idea. Sorry, Ross. Yeah. The idea for Tottenham, as we know, is to not have the ball. So you give them the ball, what's the keeper got to do? He's going to give it back to them, and they're going to not really want the ball. But if they start playing, then you can get yourself into a position where you can counter-attack them a little bit. Maybe they just start to get a little bit of confidence from it. It all seems to meld for me in my head into a nice little game plan.
It feels like another game as well. Me and Chris have talked about this a bit in recent weeks, where Nottingham would go on a bit more direct than this, I think. You know, you've got the bravery in midfield to go and win second balls, because it's the same notion as that. Just go long, but go under hit long. And if they and then put their defenders under pressure, put Højbjerg under pressure, and go and do the, again, engineer a counter press kind of situation, because again, they don't want to be on the ball. I'm not saying they can't be on the ball, because the Tottenham, the Pochettino's team still, so they're all very good in possession of the football, but it's not something they've been doing lots of this year, so why not put it on the toes?
Yeah, I think you've got to make them question themselves, or you know, their preparation. We've seen Liverpool before. Again, Fulham was probably a good example of that, where Liverpool pass it round, take possibly too many chances, and every time Liverpool aren't firing all cylinders, it's we need that creative midfielder, or maybe a Chamberlain. I think it's now Thiago is now that person to thread a ball through. In that sense, Liverpool can be a bit predictable because they're waiting for that chance, the patient, they're waiting for the right opportunity. Sometimes I think if you either pot shot, a time and a place, not just constantly have pop shots, I think the right time, right place, if you've got like sight on goal, then you can go for it. But also putting pressure on the defender is right. You know, if they start questioning what their plans was and what they thought Liverpool were going to do, then you mix things up. I think you question what they're doing, and maybe that split second of concentration, or what's the Chamberlain going to do in this situation? Is he going to pass it round side to side, or is he going to have a shot? You've got to move position, which then creates space for other people.
I tell you what, I'd expect to see a lot of Andy Robertson in this game as well, you know, more so than Trent Alexander-Arnold, because I think, you know, in these types of games, you don't want Trent crossing the ball into the box, you know, from where he likes to take his crosses from. I'll caveat that with, because it's just, because he's deep, the defenders can see it coming. Whereas Robbo, if he gets to the byline and starts looking for those little cutbacks and, you know, those little 1-2s with Mane, which we didn't really see against Fulham, actually, that's the type of ball across the box that can cause Tottenham problem. The other thing, sorry, mate, for me is that, like, you know, I've said all this about the pot shots. I think it's also worth remembering that the lads don't think like us. They'll look at that and go, great, you're going to sit back, it's a training session for us, and they'll believe that they can break through them regardless.
Yeah.
What us as fans think.
The thing that's got to be wary of is I think we just got to be brave enough to attack centrally, because you're right, because that's what how have people shut Liverpool down? You have a lot of men behind the ball, and you let Trent have the ball deep, because he can't hear you. He can't. He's one of the few people who can't hear. But again, you're reducing the percentages of what how likely he is to hurt you, and you make it difficult for Liverpool to work that overlap. And if you can do that, which is a lot, which is a big ask, but lesser teams have done it. Fulham did a very good job of it, and it's Fulham. This is Tottenham, who've got the best defensive record and the best defensive manager in the Premier League overseeing it all. That it's about there is about shades of bravery through the middle of the park, and it's not like, because I always reference that Burnley game, Mane's first season when he
fattered our shots.
Yeah, exactly. And we're just having digs for no reason. It's not that. It's just mixing it up every now and again. It's every now and again. There's nothing wrong with just having a crack at goal just to go. You think you've got us pegged here? Okay, well, every now and then, if it just gets a little bit stale, we just find we can't break it through, just shift, find a little angle and have a go and just keep Lloris on his toes, because we know he's a good goalkeeper, but he's not a perfect goalkeeper. And it just makes them think, it gives them pause for thought that maybe their game plan's not going to work.
It's like two boxers going head-to-head, isn't it? And then one of them switching up to southpaw for a bit. Yeah. And that's all we're doing. We're just changing the angles. We're just changing it, finding a new way through the defence.
The thing for me on this is, I wonder whether, again, Operation Top at Christmas doesn't have to be one here. And I wonder whether we go with an approach where let's go and throw it at them for 10, 15 minutes. If it works, laughing. If it doesn't work, okay. Take 40, 50 minutes out of the game and just, you know, again, no pressure, rest in possession, drag Spurs around a bit, use certain members of our team to kind of cause fatigue in all theirs. Don't overcommit because there's no pressure. Because again, I know they're on top of the league, but they're still chasing us. Liverpool are still seen as the team to hunt down, we're the team to stop. Psychological players, and don't give them the opportunities that they're waiting for, they're craving, and let them get a bit antsy and see what happens when that team isn't being pummeled and isn't getting loads of counter-attacking opportunities to put us to bed, and get yourself to a situation where you've got 20 minutes left in the football match, and then you spring something different, then you go a little bit braver and you see what Spurs have got left.
I'm going to riff on that and go that he doesn't start any of the front three, because they're not going to play the ball, so we're not trying to score in the first 70 minutes. We're just going to drag them around, then we'll put the front three on with 70 gone when they're a little bit tired, and then look to spring them.
No, but look at it, Chris. We've got, there's this game, it draws fine in the war of attrition of the league. Us beating Spurs doesn't win the league for us regardless. It gives us a very positive step towards it. But looking ahead to the next week and a half that follows, we've got Palace away at the weekend, which is a difficult game. But it's notable that Palace will have been a bit busier having played a midweek game, which is something they're not used to, so they'll be more fatigued. And in addition, London's gone into will be in Tier 3 by then, so they won't have fans in the stadium for that kind of thing. So I'd rather be playing Palace this weekend than last weekend at that point. Spurs have got Leicester that weekend as well, which is that little spell of us. Leicester reminds me so much of Leicester last season. When they were up, they were our nearest competitor for a little while, and they played City, then they played us, and you got a real sense of where they were at. I actually think Spurs will do Leicester, but there's a strong possibility. Then they've got Stoke in the League Cup in the midweek, when we've got our feet up and we're looking, you know, and we're seeing family and boosting the spirits. And then they play Wolves on the 27th when we're playing West Brom, and all of a sudden, you don't necessarily need, I wonder whether that'll be in Klopp's mindset of actually, it might be a bit shit for us as fans, but in the larger war that we're facing at the moment, us not going mad to try and win this game, actually, I think Mourinho wants us to go mad and try and win this game, because that's how he gets his most benefits.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it'll be in Klopp's mind, but I think now that you said it might be Mourinho's, because that Carabao Cup, we'll have one eye on that. The Europa League, mm-hmm. He'll definitely have one eye on that.
He loves a league cup win.
But Europa League, we'll have one eye on that as well. And you haven't mentioned it, but you know,
he's got no eyes on the league then.
Yeah, exactly.
He's only got two.
Yeah, what do you do at that point? You know, he's someone that's renowned for winning trophies. That's what he does. Winning Europa League for Spurs, is that bigger for Spurs than Spurs finishing fourth?
A League Cup win will be, he'll go down in there like legendary managers in history if they pick up a League Cup
and
win.
And the chances of winning both those cups actually is significantly higher with the squad that they've got. Mm-hmm. And I think with the state of the league, I think it's it's doable for Spurs to finish fourth and win both of those trophies.
It's important
and
for
he'll
us
be very happy.
To keep on there, to be on their toes around this period because of that. Because just it's small margins, but it's just one more game of football that all starts to take its toll. It all starts to sap the energy. It all starts to draw mental energy away from you and what have you. And I wouldn't even be asked if we were 3 points behind Spurs heading into January, heading into that game in January. Because they've been really good so far and they've capitalised on it really well. But it's going to be a test of their character and a test of their reserves.
Playing Thursday nights, going to the arse end of Europe, you know, what is it, the round of 64, whatever they're in now in Europa League. You know, if they do go far in that, they've got more games to play than they have in the Champions League. So, you know, there's an extra two games on a Thursday night that they haven't got on Liverpool.
The thing is, what Mourinho's very good at doing, more so maybe than other managers that we've seen in the Premier League era, I think Guardiola's good at it as well, but for having a bigger squad, I think it helps, is he channels that League Cup win into something more. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of managers struggle with that and the season ends. And you think about where he is on his journey with Tottenham right now, that is just, look what we've done already. Look what you can therefore achieve. Exactly. And he can use that League Cup in ways other managers don't seem to be able to. He seems to use it to galvanise the squad around him personally and that style of football. Exactly the same with the Europa League. The Europa League's the one. I don't think the League Cup matters as far as the Premier League season goes, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But the Europa League one certainly does matter. And it's also the one that he'll care more about than even the League Cup.
You said it before. You said it last season when everyone was going mad about Liverpool doing being Centurions or unbeaten and all that kind of shit. You're not in a title race until April. You're not. You just.
And we never even got that last time.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, you're not, but you're just around the top of the league. It's just going quite well so far, if you're there or thereabouts at this point. Liverpool's job is just to, I think this season is just to be there. It's just to be in the conversation for as long as possible because I trust that everyone else will kind of fall apart. And if you had to bank on which team survives this longest, you'd always favour Liverpool in that environment over a Tottenham because Tottenham just haven't done it before. Mourinho's got the ability to guide them through, but again, if he goes for the League Cup in a heavily congested season, he's already about to play one more game with the quarterfinals. The semi-finals is only a single leg this time, but it's another game because I was writing out their fixtures. It doesn't account for the fact that there's a League Cup semi-finals to be played before we play them again. So there's two more games they will have played by the time we go to the London Stadium. What's it called? The Spurs Stadium? Whatever the fuck.
Who knows?
The big fancy stadium that's going to look shit in about 10 years time. The toilet bowl, yeah. If they then get through that, they've got a final, which is another game of football. And you're dead right. I'd never thought about it that way. But the Europa League is the round of 30. There is an extra round of fixtures in the Europa League that if you want to win the Europa League, you've got to play two more matches than to win the Champions League in a season like this. And that's not accounting for, they've got Marine, who they should be turning over as well. So there's a fourth round FA Cup, which still I think they might even play before we play them. If not, it'll be just after. So I do wonder whether I think we've got our eyes fixed on having to beat Spurs this week. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'd make the case that, and I don't think I've ever made this case before, that I would almost like I think Mourinho's coming in going, haha, I've got my game plan here sitting, so I've got up and Klopp just comes in and goes, but that's great. Rest in possession, boys. We're gonna win this over the next month, not this season, because Brendan Rodgers would go swinging for this, but it'd be interesting to see whether Liverpool and the club do the same.
Potentially more pressure on Mourinho to get a result from this, though. You know, you flip it round. Liverpool have got, you know, a shed load of injuries, which we keep mentioning, but are still, you know, knocking about in top place for Spurs. Now, they don't go for it now. When we come to play them in 6, 7, 8 weeks' time, whatever it is, and we get more bodies back, does he fancy his chances against Liverpool then with all those fixtures he's got? And they might have more injuries, you know, at that time as well. It's a good time to play Liverpool, you know, as much as I hate to say it. You know, if you're going to go for it, now is the time.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Again, I mentioned the Tier 3 thing, but there's another thing in that period where they're not going to have fans in the stadium, you know, supporting them on and cheering them on and these things. These are the small margins, which I think are going to make a big difference in particularly in
this time.
I don't
know how I feel about all this, you know, because I just think it's badly unfair. And I know that I was saying this yesterday on the Twitch stream that I was doing, twitch.tv/TheRedMenTV, by the way. Paul will be live later today, streaming Pro Evo. Tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay, Paul will be live tomorrow, streaming Pro Evo. I stream on a Monday, Football Manager and stuff. But I was saying that it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't, like, and people will say it's not a level playing field, the Premier League anyway. No, you're right, it's not, because of money and stuff like that, like, but not having fans in some stadiums and having fans in the other, I can't help but feel it is a big advantage. And maybe not for Palace fans, but Palace fans, you know, they create a great atmosphere, but at least they can see the game better when it's on the telly. Like, it's a fucking terrible stadium for watching the footy, like, in it, you know.
It's not
what
better,
I mean,
for Arsenal fans, is it? Could turn this fucking telly off.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
the,
they're open for a power cut as well as tier three.
No, I agree. It is. It's a bit mad. And again, it without at the risk of it, the tier system's unfair across the country, isn't it? You know what I mean? That's the nature of the whole thing. You know, people going into. I was saying how doubly unfair. My sister-in-law complaining about being in tier three in Bristol when you can still go and get a haircut and go to the shops. Which we couldn't. Like, they changed the rules on tier 3. We got the worst version of tier 3. Their tier 3 is what tier 4 is now and stuff like that. Like, it's mad. The whole situation's bonkers. But yeah, I can't bring myself to be too upset because at the moment we've got fans, and I'll cry about that when we get put into tier 3.
Just to change the subject slightly, it's not something we've spoken about, mate, but did anyone see the 538 stuff? For the Champions League. Oh my God. So I just pulled it up then. Manchester City got a 27% chance of winning the Champions League. Bayern Munich second on 19%. Third, any guesses?
Barcelona.
Barcelona, good one. You can read. 19% chance of winning
we
it.
We have five.
We're joint fourth with Real Madrid and Chelsea with a 6% chance. 6%. What the fuck have they been smoking over there at 538?
Let their algorithm do it. This is the problem with all of this stuff. Since all along, it's like we have it in terms of our understanding of football, but algorithms are for shit this year. Like, the people have built this system, but we're really confident about this, but it doesn't fucking, no accounting for a player, a game, being injured and all this kind of stuff. Like, so no, we'll.
That's the only reason they can. That's the only reason we're fourth, surely.
Does that take into account the draw that's just been, and I just think Man City going to piss whoever they've got?
Mönchengladbach.
Yeah.
That's fair, because it goes to, like, chances of progressing through each round. That'll then be the...
Yeah, but the mad thing, City have got 88% chance of making the quarters. Bayern Munich, who are second in this, have got a 90% chance of making the quarters. Then the semi, City have got a 62% chance. Bayern suddenly flips down to 58. So for some reason, it flips around at the quarterfinal stage.
Yeah, it's mad. I had someone saying about this as well. I'd not even thought about it. The Bundesliga have still got a winter break, even though it's truncated by their standards and all this kind of stuff. Like, it's
because they understand.
Five subs, and they've still managed to show. I mean, they've got less teams in the league, haven't they? But they've still managed to make space for some form of a winter break and all that. They're going to come back. I was very confident.
It's because they have the winter break, and they've always had the winter break. And England have gone, that's the first thing that we can fuck off.
Yeah.
The fucking winter break.
No, absolutely. Like, first in, first out. Yeah.
We'd have two domestic cups in Germany, the one.
Just the one.
No. Makes sense.
It's crazy, that, isn't it?
Sorted over there, aren't they? Really?
Yeah, they have got it.
Cheap season tickets.
Cheap tickets. You can have a
travel,
bevy.
Yeah,
great travel. Wonderful people. Great football culture. Great policing.
Oh, we'll have to do a little rebrand here.
Yeah, I've tried. I've worn Munich stuff on this channel before. It's
not Munich.
Oh, what?
Dortmund.
Why Dortmund?
Because Munich are the Manchester United of the Bundesliga.
But actually, the Liverpool of it when you think about it.
No.
Most successful playing red.
No.
Okay. Hoffenheim.
I can get behind Hoffenheim.
No, shit. Right, so we're going
to
wrap that up.
What's the one we went to see? Hertha Berlin. I liked them.
You liked the stadium?
Yeah, it was a good stadium.
It was a good stadium. Yeah, it was decent.
I can get behind Hertha. Good city.
Yeah, it's fine. Stick up by Munich, it's fine. If I'm gonna fucking jump ship to another club, I'm gonna make sure that we win. I jump to one that wins everything. Bollocks to that, absolute bollocks to that. Glutton for punishment to people who pick second teams and the shit.
Yeah, but, like, you know, you'll be overworked. I'll be on the Hertha Berlin channel with 38 games in a season, mate.
Would you cultivate an audience of seven people?
They won't even care when I don't turn up one week. They'll just still understand, I don't want to talk about that game either. You'll be fucking going deep into every competition.
Right, that is the final normal podcast before Christmas. We do have a Christmas special, which we're going to be recording this afternoon, that will be going coming out next week, of course, and make sure you tune in for that one. We're going to be taking some of your random questions and having a bit more of a laugh with it, yeah, just to keep you tided over during the extensive break. An entire week off between Liverpool games, which is absolutely unheard of, even in pre-season, it seems. Gents, thank you so much for that. It's been absolutely wonderful. Do go and check out, of course, threadsforreds.com, with some other designs are available. And, of course, we've got some brilliant stuff over on the Red Men merch site as well. So check all of that stuff out. And we'll see you very, very soon. Ta-da.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.